Dai Mogyo. And so I'm from Institute for the Physics and Mathematics of the Universe. And I think that there are many things in common between IPMU and the PI. So I hope many of you will visit us in the near future. And everyone will be welcome. So today I'd like to talk about some aspects of cosmology based on Hoxha-Lipschitz gravity, okay, based on these papers, some of which are with these people. Okay. So let me begin with the motivation. So it's very simple. I mean, recently Hoxha-Lipschitz proposed a new theory of quantum gravity, which is supposed to be, which is a power counting renormalizer. So I think that this is a very interesting idea. And so I want to apply this idea to cosmology. That's it. I'm such a simple-minded person. So so that's all. I mean, that's all. Okay. And because this is, power counting renormalizable theory, I'd like to start with the explaining what power counting renormalizability means. Okay. Probably I don't need to do that, but just in case. Okay. Just to remind you. Okay. And so let me explain this by just a scalar field. Okay. Scalar field has, this kind of kinetic term, phi dot square, with time and volume integral. Okay. So when we calculate the scaling dimension of the scalar field, what we do is something like this. Okay. Let's multiply time coordinate by some factor b, just number. Okay. And the same factor, let me multiply space coordinate by the same factor b. Okay. We can guess what is the scaling dimension phi by, by supposing that the phi is, scaled in this way, and assuming that the action is invariant under this scaling. Okay. So S is determined in this way. So from dt we get 1, and from the volume integral we have 3, and from 2 time derivative we have -2, and we have 2s from 2 phis. Okay. They must sum up to 0. Then we get -1. Okay. So the scalar field scales like energy, because energy is inverse of time, essentially. Okay, so when we consider some nonlinear operator, like phi to n, this operator scales like this. The reason is as follows, very simple. From dt, we get 1, and from the volume, we get 3, and from n phis, we get ns. And we have minus here because of this minus. Okay. So if this power, including minus, is non-positive, then we have a good control of this operator at high energy, okay? Because this operator becomes less and less important at high energy. So this is written in this way. I mean, the n must be equal to or smaller than 4. In this case, we have a good control. I mean, we have renormalizability. By the way, we are interested in gravity, and gravity is highly nonlinear. Because, for example, if you consider Einstein-Hilbert action, which is a curvature, and we need to calculate the crystal phase symbol, which requires inverse of the metric. So inverse of the metric is a nonlinear function of graviton, namely the fluctuation around flat space. So the gravity is nonlinear, highly nonlinear, and not renormalizable. N is larger than 4. So what to do? The idea of Hoxha-Lipschitz is very simple, but kind of dangerous. Okay? So let's just try to abandon Lorentz symmetry to get the power counting renormalizability. Okay? So we have the same action for, kinetic term for the scalar field. But we consider different scaling. Okay? So let's multiply space coordinate by b, but by different factor b to z for the time. In this case, the scaling dimension of the scalar field is calculated in this way. Okay, from dt, we get z because we have z here. And from volume, we have 3. And from 2 time derivatives, we have minus z, minus 2z. And also from alpha, 2 phi, we get 2s. They must sum up to 0. And we get this number for s. Interestingly, this is 0 for z equals 3. So if z equals 3, then the scaling dimension phi is 0. Namely, if we consider this kind of operator, phi to n, that this scales like e to this factor. Okay. And the reason for this number is the same as before. From dt, we get z, and from volume, we get 3, and from n phi, we get ns. Okay. And but from this number minus z, we have minus z here. But what is important is that for z equals 3, this is always, power, including minus, is always negative. So for z equals 3, any nonlinear interactions are renormalizable. Okay. So if gravity has this kind of scaling, then gravity may become renormalizable. This is the idea, very simple. But at the same time, dangerous, because we are abandoning Lorentz symmetry. Okay. So the next question is how to realize this kind of scaling. Okay. What kind of action would give that kind of scaling? Okay. So let's consider a scalar field. Just free scalar field, okay, given by this action. Okay. The time kinetic term is the same, just phi dot squared. But the gradient term can include many terms, because we are abandoning the Lorentz symmetry. Okay. So let's consider this kind of operator here. In this case, delta is Laplacian in three-dimensional space. So at high energy, this dominates over these three terms, because momentum is high. Okay. So in the UV, we have two time derivatives here, but six spatial derivatives here. So they balance with each other. So we realize z equals 3 naturally. Okay. So oops. So naturally we have a renormalizable nonlinear theory at high energy. But at low energy, we have something different, because they are small at low energy. And these two terms dominate the dynamics. Okay. So in the IR, we have two time derivative and two spatial derivative. So we have a familiar Lorentz invariant theory if this coefficient is the correct value. Okay. So this is the idea how to realize the z equals 3 scaling in the UV and z equals 1 scaling in the IR. But we have to note that we need a new mechanism to make limits of speed, namely this coefficient, to be the same for many degrees of freedom. Okay. And actually, these coefficients are subject to running and the renormalization group. So we have to analyze renormalization group in this context. And it's not yet been analyzed in full details, but some people did partial analysis. And it seems that the delta C equals zero, namely the, if you consider two, for example, two scalar fields, and the delta C is difference between this coefficient for different degrees of freedom. And the difference goes to zero in the IR automatically, but the approach seems to be a bit slow. So probably we need to invent new mechanism to make approach to delta C equals zero to be fast enough.
Is it the
yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. So next, I'd like to go to the gravity and how to realize z equals 3 scaling in the high energy for gravity. Okay. So yes.
Why did you have box cube?
Box cube.
Why did you stop it?
Oh, I see. So the so this is a part of the this is a part of the definition of the theory. So of course the scalar field theory has a renormalizability even without these terms. But suppose we consider gravity, and in the case of z equals if z is 3 or higher, we expect to have renormalizability. And so so the we can consider z equals 3, 4, 5, whatever numbers. But once we decide to consider theory with z equals 3, and if the theory is renormalizable, the high, I mean, terms with higher z are not generated. If it is really renormalizable. So, yeah, right, yeah, it is part of the definition of the theory. Yeah. So, in the following, I'd like to consider the theory with z equals 3, because it is a simplest case with power counting renormalizability. But we can consider z equals 4, 5, whatever number. Yeah.
I mean, when gravity is considered.
That's right, yes. Yes.
3 is the lowest. You can
that's right, yes. Yeah.
That you put it in.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yes.
What's the motivation for a renormalized
force field of gravity? In what sense? I mean, it's nice. Yes. I mean, from.
So are you saying that if I do scaling this way?
Yes.
Surely there are still interactions I can write down with
sorts of
derivatives. Or
oh, I see. For this theory.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For gravity.
Yeah. For gravity. I mean, for the scalar field case, for example, z equals 3, the scalar field is dimensionless, so we can have any kind of interaction. So we have infinite number of parameters. In that sense, for scalar field, it may be not good. But for gravity case. We will see that in the case of z equals 3, I mean, or 4, whatever number, if z is finite, then we have finite number of operators. So that we have, I mean, yeah, that is the advantage. So if we don't have renormalizability, we need to specify infinite number of parameters because we have infinite number of operators.
I mean, yeah. Am I supposed to think of this as the theory of gravity in UV, or am I supposed to think of it as yet another
attractive theory? Oh, I see. So, yeah, it would be nice if we have, I mean, this kind of theory as, UV theory. Yeah. I mean, the quantum gravity. Yeah.
But this is more predictive than an effective theory.
Yeah,
effective
yeah.
Theory breaks down at the cutoff, and it
is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Necessarily
right. If this is really renormalizable, then this can be UV complete. So,
I guess yeah. The step in my argument, I mean, is it true then that once you accept the scaling, there are simply no differently appropriately invariant operators that you can write
down?
Not just.
Yeah, we'll see how many operators we need to consider. Yeah, we'll see.
Could you say exactly what the result is again? This one you quote at the bottom? Is that the scale of fields?
I don't remember well, but they consider two scalar fields, I think, and considered, yeah, I mean, they analyze the RG flow of this coefficient, mm-hmm. and delta C goes to zero as energy scale goes to zero, but the approach is logarithmic, so it's not fast enough. I mean, of course, if we can fine tune from the beginning, then it's okay. But if the difference is order one in the UV, then approach is not fast enough. So we need some amount of fine tuning. Yeah.
Sorry. About this unique fixed point.
Yes.
How are we sure that there will be, you know, if I start doing RG flow and I go to the UV instead of infrared, there won't be any other operators like delta to the fields or whatever the whole smooth. Operators being generated.
There
I guess I'm asking, is this z equals 3? Is it really a fixed point in the UV?
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, so then that kind of leads to the previous question, how we should think of this. It looks like that this is more like an effective field theory. Unless you show that the UV fixed point is
z equals 3. So that if we include, this has not been shown. But for gravity,
Then this is just an effective field theory.
I don't know who proposes as something which is supposed to be unique.
Yeah.
This
right.
This is
Yeah, but for this.
I'm asking proposals to that. There are critiques that say this thing is unstable. It has unstable modes.
I'm asking about UV. For example, if I go, if
he's claiming it is, but I don't know what there's proof.
Who's right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
He claims there is a UV.
Yeah. But no one knows.
I think that his impression is taken from Penn-Stat models in which, you know, it is known to be.
Yeah. Right. Okay. May I go on? Okay. So let's consider gravity. So the in this case, the basic quantity is these three. Okay, Laplace function, which is a scalar in three dimensions, and shift vector, which is vector in three dimensions, and three-dimensional spatial metric. Okay. And of course, we can combine these three to make a ADM metric in this way. Probably I don't need to explain it. But I mean, at least in the IR, this makes sense because time and space, time coordinate and space coordinate scale in the same way. Okay. And having these threes as basic quantities, we have to specify the symmetry. Okay, we don't have the four-dimensional diffeomorphism invariance because we are breaking Lorentz symmetry. I mean, time and space are treated differently. Instead, we have the so-called foliation-preserving diffeomorphism. Okay, this includes, as a part, includes a three-dimensional spatial diffeomorphism. But the time translation is restricted. I mean, the time can be, transformed to arbitrary function of time. But this does not include space coordinate. Okay, so this preserves the foliation, but we can change the coordinate on each slice. Okay, so that's why this is called, foliation preserving. And we want to realize the anisotropic scaling with z equals 3 or larger. Okay, if z equals 3, it is, the theory is power counting renormalizable, and if z equals 4 or 5 or larger, then we have power counting super renormalizability. Okay, and having these, we would like to have action. Okay, the ingredients which we can use in the action are as follows. Of course, we can use usual, time integral and the volume integral, and the three-dimensional metric, and the covariant derivative with respect to this three-dimensional metric. This is not four-dimensional. This is three-dimensional. Also, three-dimensional curvature. But in 3D, the wire tensor is zero, so that we don't have to consider Riemann tensor as independent variable quantity. Just the Riemann tensor, Rich tensor is enough. Also, we want to have time derivative of Gij because Gij is dynamical quantity, and we want to have kinetic term. But Gij dot is not covariant under this diffeomorphism. So we have to combine Gij dot and other variables in this way. This is, of course, everybody knows, this is extrinsic curvature. How this represents how constant time surface is embedded in four dimensions. Okay, so let's try to construct the action. So let's start with the UV action with z equals 3. We should, of course, have time kinetic term, which includes second time derivatives, so that we can have square of Kij. But there are two ways to do that. Just Kij, Kij, and the square of trace of K. Okay. But we don't have enough symmetry to restrict the coefficient here. In GR, the four-dimensional diffeomorphism is strong enough to determine lambda equals 0, lambda equals 1, but we don't have this symmetry, so lambda is arbitrary. And also, this is subject to running and the renormalization group. Okay. Oops. And of course, we have, as promised, this integral here. And of course, the overall coefficient is arbitrary. For the potential terms, namely gradient terms, we need to include six special derivatives. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 ways to construct potential terms. Okay, and the coefficients are arbitrary and subject to algebraic flow. Okay.
So can I ask
you something?
Sure. So that n you put there.
Yes.
That could be. Can you have like a function of n there? Or
function of time only.
Function of time.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Doesn't have to be n then.
Doesn't have to be
the
one. Laplace function can be.
Just, that's the definition of Laplace, whatever system
yeah.
You call it Laplace function.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Right, yeah. Right. But the n cannot depend on space coordinate. Yeah, I will explain it later more in detail. Yeah. Yes?
If you suppose you get back to R, then
yeah.
You need to find a gauge for the space dimensions so that the Laplace system only time depends.
It's not a gauge, it's a. I mean the requirement from the theory.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. If you want to consider, I mean the suppose we have some solution in GR, and we want to embed this solution at least approximately embed this theory this solution to Hodel gravity. Then we have to make a coordinate transformation so that n is function of time. Yeah.
Is that always possible?
Yeah. Yeah. At least locally. Yes. And yeah, by the way, this kind of combination is written in terms of other terms, so that's why we have only five terms. Okay. So in the UV, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Hmm? Yeah, just 7 terms. Okay. But at low energy, we have more terms. Okay. But a finite number of terms. Okay. Here I'm demanding parity invariance, so we don't use epsilon tensor. But for z equal to 2, namely the 4 terms with 4 spatial derivatives, you have 2 combinations. Okay. And for terms with second spatial derivative, we just have 1. For constant terms, we have just 1. Okay. So, I mean, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We have 11 terms. That's all. Okay. And each coefficient arbitrary and subject to running under algebraic flow. But no one has yet analyzed it, I have to say. Okay.
But sorry, the claim and the
question. Well, again, there's still an infinite number of times, as long as you allow them to come with coefficients that are arbitrary powers of time.
Oh, no, I mean, classically, this coefficient is constant. And it's just subject to. Running under algebraic flow. It depends on scale, right? But it's not a function of, say, R or, I mean, yeah.
I guess yeah. I can rephrase the question.
Yeah, maybe I misunderstood.
How will we guarantee that this will flow to infrared? There will not be a part of the advanced term
generated. Yeah, so if this theory is really renormalizable, then, the, say, R to 10 are not generated. There isn't.
Well,
that
again,
yeah.
It has nothing to do with renormalizability because we're talking about infrared flow.
Infrared, right? Yeah.
So the question is, can there be high-dimensional operator? We know
that. So there isn't. That's the definition, yeah. That is the definition of a theory, yeah.
Well, wouldn't that be a
So we define a theory in the UV,
right?
And if this, I mean, this class of theory is, I mean, this theory, if this is renormalizable, then we don't generate, for example, R to 4, R to 5, or I mean, higher dimension operators are not generated. Right. Then we just go to, I mean, run the algebraic flow. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
New terms are not generated.
So you define it at some fixed scale.
Yes.
It's not really in the limit of the UV. You define this at some fixed scale. Fixed scale.
So if this is really renormalizable and doesn't have strong coupling in the UV, then we can go to the infinite scale.
So I guess I can believe that.
But no one has shown that this is renormalizable. I mean, this is power counting renormalizable, but the power counting renormalizability does not mean renormalizability. But as far as I know, there is no example in field theory that is power counting renormalizable, but not renormalizable. It isn't. Oh, I see. Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
QED.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's. Oh, in that sense, I mean, strong coupling, yeah. I, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Seems to be no evidence that this is a
complete. I see.
Well, just the criteria that are renormalizable Lagrangians
at the end of the story, isn't it? It's not the end of the story, but I mean, it's a good sign. Yeah.
No, I just, usually it's not a good sign. Right? I mean, in every case, there have been plenty of. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe, yeah.
Classic. And every case we've done that, it's turned out that in fact it's just better thought of as a learning approximation to some effective field theory. Some regression. Why? The only criteria you've got for not writing that, even assuming this is a fixed point of the argument. The only criterion you've got for not including all sorts of higher powers is that they wouldn't be renormalized.
So what are the exact actually
can be in the last words in the story, right? It would be having a renormalized theory would be better than having a not renormalizable theory in the sense that you can put your the next level of scale that you have to deal with much broader effect in the UV than you would have been on the other.
Well, okay, but that's I'm not even sure that's true.
So take a standard model as an example, right? If you do make a normal, then you start with something with PV, but if you do make a normal, then you can prevent it.
But I mean, then you still mean PV. What are the constants?
It's not a question of whether or not, because it sounds like you'd like to have all the answers at once, and maybe nature works in this way, but we don't understand everything when we understand gravity, but it's saying that you can hire a lot of skills that are making things right eventually.
So do you want to define this theory at scale above impact?
I think that
you have to. If you say it's an improvement, then it should follow with some scale above it. That's how GR holds up to it.
I'm just my role in this conversation is to defend renormalizability as being an improvement. It would be great to have a fine theory, but if you were to have a renormalizable theory, then all you what you bought was a specific thing. You bought the ability to put the next level of physics much higher than it would have had to have been otherwise. But where are the scalars that you choose to put in your theory? In this case, like that.
But can't you just start making predictions also if you have a renormalizability? Maybe you're not so concerned with having a Dirichlet quantum theory. There's something strange happening at higher energy scales, but if you now can use this theory and start doing computations to drive on scattering, that's interesting in some sense.
But it will break down.
We don't know.
So what's the basis for thinking this theory will go further than test?
We don't know.
There's no evidence that it's better in infinite people. There's no argument that it's better in infinite people. So it's going to break down somewhere. And why should that be not just the price?
Well, so the quantitative question, if you ask when is unitarity fail in this thing,
right.
There will be a scale that will be pointed to.
So we don't know whether this is like QCD or QED. Yeah. But at least Hojava seems to hope that this is like QCD.
And the evidence for that you're saying is coming from a better analog.
Right. Yeah.
And in that analog, what's the evidence? What's the evidence there's a fixed point in the one development in the better analog? Is the argument
I don't know where about that, but in the condensed matter, the system, the quantity which corresponds to delta C is really going to zero, and in the IR, but in the UV, I think the many models have z equal two, so that we have operator like this. And so in the UV, we have z equal 2 fixed point. And in the IR, we have z equal 1 fixed point. And with the same propagation speed.
People know that because they've done a numerical calculation? How do they identify fixed point?
Sorry, I don't know that.
Yeah. Sorry. In other words, rephrasing it in the field theoretical language, so So you have the scaling dimensions, which are classical concepts, but mm-hmm. as you go to a union mm-hmm. in for everything.
Yeah, there may be anonymous dimension. Yes, okay. That has not been analyzed.
Anomalous dimensions are small, actually.
Yeah, no one knows. I don't know.
Also, another thing, you're going to talk only about the pure gravity, because mm-hmm. once you, presumably, in order to have something realistic, mm-hmm. you need matter.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. Yeah.
But you're not going to include that.
Oh, we can include that, yeah.
But then even less is known about mm-hmm. you know, the behavior of the six points and
right,
the terms, because
you
start writing down
the same amount.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe should I go on? Yeah. Okay. So the we now know the action. Okay. So the in the IR what happens? So as I said, in the UV we are supposed to have z equals 3, so power counting normalizability. And in the IR, only the terms like these two and these two become important. So we have these four terms. And this looks like a GR, I mean, ADM action of the Einstein qubit action, okay, if lambda equal 1. So that, I mean, as I said, no one has analyzed RG flow, but if lambda goes to 1, in the IR, then we might recover GR. Okay. That is a hope.
Criticism
yes.
a few months ago yeah. by some people whose mm-hmm. names I forget that mm-hmm. said that even if lambda approaches mm-hmm. 1, mm-hmm. you're not going to recover
yeah.
GR.
Yeah, I'll talk about that. Yeah, okay. Great. Yeah. 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 Sure. So the So okay. This is related to this. I mean, Weinstein effect. Yeah. I'll talk about that. Yeah. Okay. So let me. I mean, before going to the recovery of GR in the IR, let me talk about the number of propagating degrees of freedom. Okay. So let's consider Minkowski plus perturbation in the Gaussian normal coordinate. Okay. N equals 1 and N equals 0. And the spatial metric is expanded around chronometric delta, okay, flat space. Then we still have residual symmetry, which is time independent spatial diffusion, because this is Gaussian normal coordinate. So once we specify the spatial coordinate on initial surface, then these two conditions, completely fix the coordinate other than this surface. So this determines how slices evolve, and this determines how spatial coordinates are propagated. So we still have this symmetry, and we have to specify it. Also, we have momentum constraint coming from equation motion for Ni. And this is of this form, where capital Hi j is given by this, where lambda is a number here. Okay. So we can fix the residual gauge by setting the divergence of capital H to be zero at some fixed time surface. Then, because of this momentum constraint, this condition is satisfied at all time. Okay. So by demanding this, we can solve the momentum constraint, and at the same time, we can fix the residual symmetry completely. Okay. So all we have now is physical degrees of freedom. So we can decompose a capital Hij into trace part and traceless part. Okay. And because Hij is already transverse, we have TT part, which is just a tensor graviton, 2 degrees of freedom, and trace part, which is which we call scale graviton. So we have 1 extra degree of freedom. Okay. So what happens when lambda goes to 1? Okay. So let's expand the original metric perturbation Hij by the TT part, namely this part, H tilde, and the trace part. Okay. Then there is a factor 1 minus lambda here. So that if we take the limit where lambda goes to 1, the scalar graviton H becomes pure gauge. This vanishes, and this is just a derivative, second derivative of scalar. So this is pure gauge. So it decouples. denominator
yeah. theory is what? Denominator in the last term is what?
This one? This is, delta squared. Yeah.
So that's
the
whole awesome. That's the whole
awesome. Yeah, Laplacian. Yeah. Right. So the, we have to be careful. Because if we substitute this into the this action, then what we get is something like this for time kinetic term. Okay, so we have usual time kinetic term for tensor graviton, but the time kinetic term for scalar graviton has factor lambda minus one. So this goes to zero as lambda goes to one. So we have strong coupling here for the scalar graviton. Okay, so we have to be careful. And I have to confess that no one has yet analyzed this. Strong dynamics yet. But this does not have to be problem. This is just saying that we have to be careful because, for example, in the case of massive gravity, when mass goes to zero, there is a strong coupling in the scalar gravity. Scalar sector, but it is known that by including the nonlinear interactions, that sector decouples from the rest of the world, so the usual GR is recovered. If that kind of effect, which is called Wanscher effect, is there for this system, then we can recover GR in the IR. What is different from the massive gravity is that this theory is supposed to be UV complete. Supposed to be. It's not proven. But so in the case of massive gravity, the strong coupling implies that we cannot trust classical dynamics. So even if we have Wanscher effect, we cannot trust the result because we have to take into account all quantum corrections, which we don't know for massive gravity. But in this case, because if this theory is really renormalizable and UV complete, then we can trust the Wanscher effect, if it is there. But the problem is, no one has yet analyzed this.
So yes. These papers that yes. came out in May were making a claim, if I remember, that we could not get rid of that.
So right, yeah. The claim.
The Senate was there for sure. Mm-hmm. You're saying we don't know.
We don't know, yeah. The claim of that paper is that because of strong coupling, the theory does not make sense.
Yes.
It's too early to say that.
All right.
Yeah, we don't know.
Do you have? So those people responded, do they agree with this?
I think so. Some amount, yes. And some amount, yeah. There's a, they feel like that there isn't a Wanscher effect. But I believe that there should be a Wanscher effect, I think. But no one knows.
So,
yeah. Actually, there are two papers, at least two papers. One is about this theory without projectability condition, and in that case, the statement, is wrong. I forgot the name of the. I think there is. This paper. Yeah. In this paper, there are at least two claims. One is that there is a strong coupling between scalar graviton and the matter sector.
Yeah.
And that statement is wrong if we consider projectability condition. Anyway, they considered the version where Laplace function is function of space and time. That version does not work. That version has a problem of strong coupling between scalar graviton and the matter sector. But version with the projectability condition, namely, if we consider Laplace function as a function of time only, then that problem does not exist. But there is another claim of that paper. And another claim is that the scalar graviton becomes strongly coupled by itself. Namely, self-coupling becomes strong. That statement is, I think, correct for any version of positive gravity. And that is what I'm mentioning here. And this does not have to be a problem. This is a difficulty in analysis. And we don't know what happens.
But it might
Yeah. Yeah, might be a problem. Might be okay. Don't we don't know. Yeah.
Could you comment, for example, that the lattice function doesn't depend on the x and z infrared? How is that being enforced?
Infrared.
But how do you know, because again, you formulate, suppose, so I'm saying, if
this theory recovers GR, this statement is, I mean, to be precise, this theory may recover GR in a, I mean, particular gauge, where lapse function is function of time only.
Let's forget about whether or not it recovers GR. I mean, if I take it as a theory, which I am, say, I am buying that it's, you define it as a UV and it's a UV fixed point, so that function depends only on time. Are there some indications that as we flow to the infrared, so that function will still depend only on time?
No, it's, I mean, the projectability condition is part of the definition of the theory, so we cannot change it. I'll mention it later, yes. Okay. May I?
So there is a difference between what we put in classically and what will happen once there will be one.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Anomaly is, I mean, but I mean, I would say that it doesn't happen because the, I mean, okay, maybe I should mention it later. So the, yeah.
It's quite tricky to compare quantum mechanics to field mechanics. M is any quantum mechanics.
Oh, right. Yeah. I see. Yeah, there may be a subtlety, but yeah.
That seems very hard to imagine.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And remains.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah.
But N is not even dynamical.
It's not even
dynamical. Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. So, I mean, I have to mention that there are at least four versions of the theory. And I mean, with or without the detailed balance condition. And with or without the projectability condition. The projectability condition is saying that the lapse function is function of time only. And the detailed balance condition is just a way of reducing number of parameters. I mean, by demanding that the potential terms are square with something. And something comes from the equation motion in of three-dimensional theory. But the version, I mean, this version only makes sense, I think. So let's consider this version.
So what goes wrong if you have detailed balance?
Yeah, for example, the cosmology constant is negative. We cannot have positive cosmology constant. So it cannot represent our world. And also the if we have
logically
it's just
not empirically.
So if we consider z equals 3 with detailed balance condition, the theoretically there may be a problem because the scalar graviton doesn't have the 6 special derivative term. Then the z equal 2 is realized for scalar graviton. And if there is any coupling between scalar graviton and tensor graviton, of course there is. And then probably power counting renormalizability will be lost. Probably. So
can you just remind us what detailed balance is?
Yes, detailed balance condition. I mean here. I wrote down many terms, and the detailed balance conditions say that I mean some of these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and four and one more extra terms coming from I mean violation of parity should be square of something, and something comes from equation motion of three-dimensional Euclidean theory. That's the statement. Yeah.
When this condition is true somehow.
Sorry.
What's the role of that condition?
In that case, for example, So the four-dimensional wave functions are related to three-dimensional one, and RG flows are related to lower dimensional one and so on. So there are some nice things. Yeah. But I don't consider that. Yeah. And however, still even for this version, there are many, I mean, fundamental issues to be addressed in the future. And we don't know whether this makes sense or not. But as far as I know, there is no known, I mean, explicit inconsistency. But we don't know whether it makes sense or not. So, I mean, yeah, there is no answer. Okay. So let me explain what the projectivity condition is. I mean, I already explained it. I mean, that n must be a function of time. Okay. So let's consider this infinitesimal version of foliation preserving diffeo, which is, I mean, which changes time to arbitrary function of time and space coordinate as arbitrary function of time and space. Okay. Let's forget about these two. Just concentrate on this. Okay. Then the space independent n cannot be transformed to space dependent n because f is function of time. So this is function of time. And if n is space independent, this is function of time, also this one, also. So the we cannot change the, I mean, we cannot include space dependence by coordinate transformation. Okay. So it is consistent to make n to be space independent. Okay. Also, the n is gauge degrees of freedom associated with the space independent time departmentalization. So it makes, I mean, perfect sense to consider n as a function of time only. Okay. Yeah, this is what I said. As a consequence, the Hamiltonian constraint, which is the equation of motion for n, is not a local equation, but the equation integrated over whole space. And actually, I mean, this is saying that it is very natural to consider n as a function of time only. But actually, if we impose the local Hamiltonian constraint, namely, if we consider n as a function of time and space, there are a lot of problems. They pointed out. And actually, as I said, those problems disappear once we notice that there is no local Hamiltonian constraint. So we really have to consider the version with the projectability condition. Every Laplace function must be a function of time only. Okay.
So, I'm not quite sure what the problems that you're talking about, mm-hmm. but I disagree that there is problems.
Yeah. So the strong coupling between the matter sector and the scalar graviton comes from the local Hamiltonian constraint.
Yeah.
They use it. But if we don't have local Hamiltonian constraint,
I mean, not strong with a strong coupling.
Yeah, there is a strong coupling of the scalar graviton itself. Yeah, self coupling. And so it does not have to be a problem. I mean, so if there is a Weinstein effect says that that strong coupled sector, I mean, is decoupled, I mean, but I mean, as a whole. So it does not couple to our sector.
So that
yeah, if there is a Weinstein effect, there is no problem, I mean, about strong coupling. Yeah.
So you can't calculate it.
We don't have to.
Right,
oh, right, yeah. But in the UV, there's no need. I mean, lambda deviates from one, I think, by algebra. Yeah, of course, I mean, yeah. Okay. So, this comes back to the, a question which was raised before. I mean, so whether the theory makes sense with space independent Laplace function. Okay, actually, we can have a Schwarzschild black hole as an exact solution in this theory. Yeah. So this is just a Schwarzschild metric written in a finite coordinate. So the here Laplace function is exactly one, and shift vector is non-zero, but the special metric is completely flat. So the higher special curvature terms do not contribute. So this is exact solution if lambda equals one. And also, we can have Lemaître reference frame or a Dolan coordinate and so on. I mean, this is for Schwarzschild metric and this is for Haar metric. I mean, they are Gaussian normal coordinate. So the Laplace function is one. But the spatial metric is curved. So if you consider large enough black hole, then higher curvature terms are small. So that they provide us an approximate solution in this theory. Okay. And for the star solution, we don't know yet. So this is a work in progress with some postdocs. Okay. at IBM U. So this is the end of the theory part, and I'd like to talk about cosmology. Maybe I don't have time, but.
Just, is there a Birkhoff theorem?
I think no, because we have a scalar, I mean, degrees of freedom, at least if lambda is not one.
So there is no
Birkhoff. Yeah, no. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So how much time can I spend for cosmology part?
Let's say 15 minutes.
Hmm? 15
minutes.
Okay. Yes. So the I think, I mean, as I said, there are many fundamental issues to be addressed in the future, such as renormalizability and RG flow. But I think it's still interesting to investigate cosmological implications. Actually, there are many people who are doing this, like me. Okay. And for example, the higher curvature terms, I mean, higher spatial curvature terms lead to regular bounds. And some people claim that the higher curvature terms also might make the flatness problem milder. I'm not sure about this, but maybe. Also, the z equals 3 scaling leads to scaling invariant cosmological perturbation from non-inflationary epoch. This I will explain this soon. Okay. Also, the absence of local Hamiltonian constraint leads to kind of dark matter as the integration constant. Okay. And there are many interesting things. So let me explain this. Okay. So by the way, the most recent paper, which I wrote with Maeda and Shiromizu, was based on this kind of idea, very similar. Okay. So let me remind you that what is the story about a usual V equal one scaling, namely Lorentz invariant theory. Okay. Let's consider some particular mode of fluctuation. And it is characterized by some frequency omega. And if omega is larger than Hubble parameter, that mode just flux, I mean, oscillate. I mean, we don't, I mean, that mode doesn't care the Hubble expansion. On the other hand, in the opposite case, where omega is smaller, then that mode is freeze because of Hubble friction. So if h square over omega square is increasing function of time, then this happens first and this happens later. So this is a generation of, I mean, superhorizon fluctuation. Okay. In the usual story, in usual case, omega is proportional to, I mean, k square over a square. So by plugging this here, we get this condition. So the second derivative of, I mean, scale factor must be positive. Namely, that we need accelerated expansion, namely inflation, to generate superhorizon fluctuation. Also, the scaling invariance of perturbation requires inflation. Okay. So for z equal 1, we have this kind of scaling. So the phi scales like energy. So the fluctuation of the phi is proportional to energy scale of the problem. In the case of cosmology, the Hubble parameter determines the energy scale of the problem. So the fluctuation is proportional to h, as usual. So this is the Hawking temperature of Dojita horizon. So this makes sense. Okay. But we want to make this to be almost scaling invariant. So h must be almost constant. While fluctuation of different scales are created. So that's why h is almost constant. And if h is constant, we have exponential expansion. That's why we need inflation. Okay. On the other hand, for the case with z equals 3 here, story is a bit different. This condition is the same. In order to have oscillation followed by freeze out, we need to have this condition. But omega is different. Omega is proportional to a to minus 6. So by plugging this to here, we get this condition. The second derivative of the volume must be positive. So if we have power law expansion, the exponent can be, I mean, if exponent is larger than 1/3, it does not have to be larger than 1. So we don't need accelerated expansion. Also, for z equals 3, we know that the scaling dimension phi is 0. So it does not depend on, I mean, the fluctuation phi does not depend on energy. Namely, the even if the Hubble parameter changes quickly, we have scaling invariance automatically. So in order to have super horizon, super, I mean, scale invariant fluctuation, we don't need inflation. Of course, in order to have, in order to solve flatness problem and so on, we need inflation. But just for super horizon scale invariant fluctuation, we don't need that. Okay. So the story is something like this. The flux, I mean, the horizontal axis is logarithmic log A. A is scale factor, and L is some physical scale. Okay. The freeze out happens when H is approximately the same as omega. Okay. This happens at this scale, okay, sound horizon, which scales like H to minus one third, yes. Okay. So this grows much slower than the Hubble horizon. So that the even for p smaller than one, if it is larger than one third, the physical scale can go out from inside to outside the horizon. Okay. And however, at low energy, the sound horizon and the Hubble horizon agrees. So the we have usual tilt, so the fluctuation comes in again. Yes.
Actually known before when people were just looking at the form dispersion relations. Mm-hmm. From what I remember, the problem is 10 to the minus 5, not getting scale invariance, but getting the amplitude
part. I think this is not, this wasn't known.
Sorry?
I think this wasn't known.
I think it was.
Oh, really?
The issue
yeah. Yeah.
That issue not have the special interest mm-hmm. of the amplitude. Mm-hmm. And you basically find that there has to be some parameter in dispersion relations, mm-hmm. which is like 10 to the 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah. So in this case, the amplitude is proportional to okay. So m is the denominator in the k to six term, and so this is fixed. And but this is not the curvature perturbation. In order to convert this to curvature perturbation, I mean I will invoke the something like curvature mechanism, and I mean the efficiency or conversion depends on the details of the model. And I think we can fine tune the parameters so that the curvature perturbation can be 10 to minus 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, afterwards. Yeah.
Right. So what's the scale that we advance on the 10 from communication? Do you have hints on that M?
I don't know, but so M can depend on what kind of physical degrees of freedom we are considering. But for example, if we consider a photon, the this kind of M must be higher than 10 to 11 GeV or something like that. Yeah, that comes from recent data from the Fermi observation and MAGIC also. So if M is lower than 10 to minus 10 to 11 GeV, then the dispersion relation makes the how to say delay time delay of too large. Okay.
I'm a little confused. You have a scalar field or not?
Yeah, I'm considering a scalar field here. Yes, and the curvature. That scalar field is the curvature itself. So at high energy, the scalar field does not feel the mass because of high energy. And high and Hubble parameter is too large. And we have z equals 3 scaling here. So that we have super horizon fluctuation. And at low energy, we have z equals 1. And also the mass term becomes important. So the scalar field starts rolling. And eventually it oscillates and heats the universe. But we already have a super horizon fluctuation, which comes in later. So that it is converted to curvature perturbation. That is the idea. Here I'm not considering photon at this degree of freedom, but
but the assumption is that the same as scaling holds for every
right. I mean that so we don't have to consider z equals 3 for renormalizability of matter sector. However, if we have z equals 3 for gravity, and the quantum correction should generate terms which leads to z equals 3 for matter sector. inevitably, I think. So in the UV, we have 3 equals 3 for all degrees of freedom, I think. Yeah. And I mean, tensor mode also has scale invariant spectrum.
But it's not too hard. Amplitude.
Yeah, some people did the analysis, and it's the right amplitude. Yeah, it's small enough to be consistent with CMB. Yeah. I mean, I think the first person who did it, Takahashi and Soda. Yeah. So tensor perturbation is small enough. And also, it may produce, let me be for discussion later.
Okay. Can I just tell you, the amplitude is related to M?
Yeah. Amplitude of a scalar field is related to M.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So maybe I should stop here or?
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's might be a good time to place the stuff actually, because you probably get to another one.
Maybe people want to leave and leave
If people want to leave, can leave.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, let's
have okay, thank you. Okay, so should I continue now?
Well, you can just wait for
the other. Oh yeah, yeah. Sure.
See you again.
Yeah.
How long are you here for?
I leave tomorrow morning.
Maybe I'll talk to Keith.
Okay. Yeah. So I'd like to talk about the second part. Okay, dark matter. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
The scale invariance of the fluctuations. Would we simply say that is a consequence of the fact that this is a purely
empirical
one?
Yeah. I mean, the z equals 3 is essential. Yeah.
Right.
So, for example, if we have z larger than 4, larger than 3, then probably we have a blue spectrum. Yeah.
Right. Because, so, did you understand what I'm saying? Lifshitz, it's a purely empirical one, right?
Yeah, right.
And so, z greater than 3 would not be. Would not be a critical point?
It could be, sure.
But you wouldn't get a scale invariant.
Yeah, we don't have a scale invariant perturbation from this kind of idea. Of course, we have inflation, we can have it. But from this kind of, I mean, simple analysis, we don't have scale invariance if z equals larger than 3. Yeah. Okay, so let me remind you the structure of GR. Okay, so GR has a four-dimensional diffeomorphism invariance, so that we have 4 constraints at each point and each time. Okay, so that we have 1 Hamiltonian constraint and 3 momentum constraint. Okay, and of course, as you know, the constraints are preserved by dynamical equations. So, as far as the initial condition satisfies the constraints, we can just solve the dynamical equation because constraints are preserved. Okay. The structure of Hodge-Lifshitz gravity is similar, but a bit different. Okay, the symmetry is different, and the foliation preserving diffeo is a three-dimensional spatial diffeo plus space-independent time departmentalization. So we have 3 local constraints, which are 3 momentum constraints at each point and each time, plus 1 global constraint coming from this symmetry. Okay, and this is Hamiltonian constraint at each time, but this is integrated over whole space. This is not a local equation. So this is a bit unusual, but the constraints are preserved by dynamical equations as before. So we can just consider, I mean, just solve dynamical equation as far as initial condition satisfies constraint equation, okay? So let's consider IR limit of this theory. We have these 4 terms, as I explained before. These are kinetic terms and they are potential terms, okay? This looks like GR if lambda equals 1. But a bit different because N is function of time only. So global Hamiltonian constraint is, I mean, usually we have local Hamiltonian constraint of this form. This is 0. But this is integrated over whole space, okay? We don't have local equation. And for momentum constraint and dynamical equations, we have usual equations. Okay, this is a zero I component of Einstein equation, and this is IJ component of Einstein equation. Okay. Surprisingly, we can solve. I mean, we can give general solution to these two equations, but it's kind of trivial. So let's define THL by this equation. Okay, so this is the definition of this quantity, namely the mismatch from the usual Einstein equation. Okay. Then what this says is that the zero I component of extra term is zero, and IJ component of extra term is zero. So we have only time component. Okay. So the n mu is defined by this. So that this is normal vector to the constant time surface. Okay. So this is a general solution. And by the way, n mu satisfies geodesic equation. So this is nothing but T mu nu for dust. Namely, this is like CDM. Okay. And of course, we have global Hamiltonian constraint, but this is not so strong because this is integrated over whole space, including region far outside our horizon. So we have many patches of our universe, many patches of universe, and they must sum up to zero. But this can be positive everywhere in our patch of our universe. So this does not restrict the value of rho HL in our universe. Okay. And also we have Bianchi identity, namely the divergence of this equation. Then we get the conservation equation if the matter sector satisfies conservation equation. Okay. If not, the matter sector plays the role of source. So that even if dark matter is zero in the R universe, the matter sector can source the dark matter. And the dark matter is, I mean, initial condition of dark matter is given
but
by matter.
Not yes.
How to say? It is in the sense that there is no reality.
There is no
reality.
It's not a fluid. Yeah. Reality.
Yeah, there's no action for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but my point is that there's a singular stream, just so as the streams cross, that mm-hmm. this breaks down.
Oh, right, sure, yeah, yeah. Before that, UV physics becomes important because if we have a caustics, this is a caustics of constant time surface. And in GR, it is just a coordinate singularity. But in this theory, the caustics of constant time surface is a real singularity. So that we will enter the UV regime, and I expect to have bounds because of higher derivative terms and deviation from lambda equal one. Yeah. Yeah. So by the way, this is a derivative in the direction of n. Okay. So that so if this is zero in the Friedemann background, this is a trace of k, so that this is 3h, so that we have, I mean, usual relation a to rho is proportional to a to minus 3. Yes.
If we can turn things around and saying that if you want to say that that corresponds to a dark matter, what kind of constraints does it put on non-conservation of the stress energy?
Sorry, what kind of? I mean, yes.
So if I look at this.
Yes, this one.
This equation.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So if I have rho HL being non equal to zero, then the right hand side is not zero.
Initially, yes. But afterwards, this can be zero. I mean, for example, in the Friedemann background, that if this is zero, rho HL is proportional to a to minus 3. So that once it is said to be non-zero, it is non-zero. So that in UV region, you have more terms, like coming from, for example, if lambda equals not 1, there is a term proportional to lambda minus 1. And also, higher derivative terms contribute to the right-hand side. So that whatever breaks the full four-dimensional diffeomorphism morphism sources the dark matter. So it happens in the UV. This is zero. Yeah, this should be zero. And in the IR, we have usual, I mean, evolution for dark matter.
Okay.
So also we have a Poisson equation coming from this and the conservation equation for this. So we have complete set of equations.
Okay.
for that model. But there is no real, I mean, degrees of freedom. It's just, I mean, kind of illusion.
Right, it is a scale degree of freedom. We did have a scale.
Yeah, but here I'm considering lambda equal one. So the it, I mean, scalar graviton is supposed to be decoupled if there is Brownian effect.
But it doesn't decouple because it's the dark matter.
No, no, this is not physical, I mean, degrees of freedom, I think. I mean, the initial value problem of this theory consists of the momentum constraint and dynamical equation and Hamiltonian constraint, okay? And the number, of, I mean, physical degrees of freedom is matter fields and the tensor graviton and the scalar graviton. And the scalar gravitons are supposed to be decoupled. So we have tensor graviton and matter. Once we specify the initial condition, which satisfies the global Hamiltonian constraint and the momentum constraint, we can just solve the dynamical equation.
Sure.
Yeah. And after that, after solving it, we want to compare the result with the result of GR. Something is different. And the difference is interpreted as dark matter. And the reason is that the global Hamiltonian constraint is less restrictive than local Hamiltonian constraint. So that we have more solutions.
If you eliminate the visible matter of
low,
would you have some dark matter?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, if rho is zero, rho HL is zero initially, and there's no matter, it's zero.
Would you but, expect a connection between the baryonic dark matter and dark matter? Or the baryonic matter and dark matter?
Oh, you mean the in this space. This sector can include the you mean dark matter. Sorry.
What is that? If you get your dark matter is some sort of artifact of solving equations where you put it row, so it's sourced by variance, would you expect some connection between the
I see.
The matter distribution and variance?
I see, I expect that. Yeah. In the early universe I think that there should be a superhorizon fluctuation matter field and graviton, and it serves as source. So that there should be a correlation,
so
maybe.
So should be solving the Boolean cluster.
Yeah, I don't know, but maybe. But it's so
separated. Right?
Yeah, it's kind of complicated. But in principle, we can. Yeah.
So it's more like more on the type in the sense that if I loosely call that dark matter or dark fields that are related to variance matter. So in your case as well. There is a connection between
maybe, but I have to think.
But in the Robson Walker, you said that the right hand side is zero, right?
Right. So in the IR, even if there is, I mean, matter degree of freedom, if it satisfies conservation, it doesn't source. So
they're actually independent. It's just higher energy in the UV.
Yeah, that's right.
You'll have extra turns
of
source.
Yeah. So initial conditions are related.
The source is about outer white.
Right. That's right. So, we have, at least for overall smooth behavior, we have pressureless dust. But we can consider microscopic lumps of low HL. Then I think they can collide and bounce and so on. And they may behave like cluster of particles. So each lump of low HL may play the role of particles in usual CDM. But we have to analyze this. This is very complicated.
These are very model dependent for the UV, then how you put the matter around them, right?
For this PPI, I probably know, but probably it depends on what kind of terms are included as higher delta terms. Choice of Z and choice of terms and so on. So if Z is higher, then probably bouncing behavior is strong, and probably. Right. Also, it may be interesting to consider the fact that the dispersion relation for matter, say photons and so on, are related to the rest frame of dark matter. Because the dispersion relation, all matter fields must respect the foliation preserving diffeomorphism. Namely, the part of it includes the three-dimensional diffeomorphism. So the dispersion relation must be defined with respect to constant time surface. But the dark matter is perpendicular to the constant time surface in this model. So they are related. So there may be some astrophysical implications, but I haven't yet thought about it in detail. So if you have any ideas, please let me know.
Just to go back. We need rho. You said rho could be positive everywhere in our horizon.
Right.
Is it obviously a problem if it's positive in some places and negative in others, even in our own universe?
I don't think so. I mean, as far as total rho is positive. Yeah. If total, I mean, rho total is negative, then it is a problem, I think.
Yeah.
But as far as rho total, including this rho and radiation energy density and the cosmological constant and so on, are positive, I think it's not a big problem.
But even if you had rho, varying, then where rho is negative would be sort of obvious voids,
right.
And rho is positive would become positive.
Yeah.
And so you end up with quite an inhomogeneous universe.
Right.
It's not obvious that, supernova results, etc., would require cosmological constants anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. Really?
So it's kind of interesting.
I see.
If you have voids, actually, you can fit LCD in beta.
I see. That's interesting. Interesting.
Because otherwise, if you say the rho had to be positive everywhere in our observable universe, causally, that might be difficult to arrange.
I don't think so. As I said, the initial condition of rho is set by the matter and the fluxation matter. So that in the early universe, we have super horizon fluxation. It means that the wavelength of fluxation is very long. It includes fluxation with wavelengths longer than current Hubble horizon. So there is a region, region with large enough volume with positive rho and negative rho. And we are living in
Is there a sort of an anthropic reason for why, or some other better reason for why we would live in the positive?
I don't know. We have two choices.
Positive or negative.
Probably if we specify the model, we can calculate the typical amplitude for the super horizon fluxation. So that we can predict the amplitude. But we cannot predict whether we can live in a region with positive or negative region. Okay. So let me summarize. So this theory is power counting renormalizable and can be a candidate for quantum gravity. So I think this is interesting. Oops. So there are many fundamental issues, but I think it's interesting to consider cosmological implications. And the Z=3 scaling leads to scaling invariant cosmological perturbations for power expansion, even without inflation. Okay. And the lack of local Hamiltonian constraint leads to dark matter, kind of dark matter, as an integration constant. Okay. And there are many open problems. And we don't know whether this theory is really renormalizable beyond power counting argument. Okay. RG flow has not yet been analyzed. We have to show that lambda equal 1 is an IR fixed point. Also, we want to embed this theory to a unified theory. Namely, one of the requirements is that we have to realize that common value for the limit of speed. So for, say, photon and electron and muon and so on. Okay. But probably we need a new idea. Okay. Also, as I said, the vanishing effect must be shown for the recovery of GR. And I want to specify the set up, how to set up initial condition for dark matter. And also, we can have a scaling invariant perturbation, but the observation suggests some tilt. But we can have some tilt from anomalous dimension. So And also, I want to address the flatness problem. Probably it's difficult, but yeah, we have to say yes or no. Okay. Okay, there are many things to do. Okay. Thank you very much.
Is an equivalent statement the spectral tilt that as lambda runs, you'll get deviations? Is that what you mean by anomalous?
I mean the cult. Suppose we consider scalar field is equal to 3, and coefficient of k to 6 term is also probably subject to running.
Right.
Or the relevant term may become important at relatively low, I mean intermediate scale. In that case, we expect to have some running, spectral tilt. So I want to consider this possibility.
Well, I guess, can you tell me again, what do you mean by why is there a problem with the speed for the kind of matter?